Our soil health report is a multi-page report where the front page rates you using a color-coded, you know, your results using a color-coded scale. So like red is kind of like, ooh, you better pay attention to this. And if you have something that flags red, it actually automatically flags up associated constraints, right? And then in the later pages, we kind of get into, these are your results. This is how you fall into everyone. This is what that means for your cropping systems, et cetera. And then the last two pages of the report talk about short and long-term management suggestions. So we don't make recommendations. And this is because we respect farmers. It's also because we work with farmers around the world, farming basically anything you can imagine.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Boost your yields with KWS Hybrid Rye featuring Pollen Plus technology. Learn more at kws.com.
Welcome to the Crop Science Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisenetics. I'm Brian Arnell, and I'm coming to you from the campus of Oklahoma State University. Today, excited to have on Kirsten Kurtz, Assistant Director of Cornell Soil Health Lab, School of Integrative Plant Science, Soil and Crop Sciences section at Cornell University. Kirsten specializes in soil health assessment and sustainable land management. She advances research, collaborates with stakeholders, and promotes soil conservation. Known for blending art and science, she engages the public through soil painting to raise awareness about environmental sustainability and the importance of healthy soils. Kirsten, extremely excited to have you on today as a lab director and involved soil scientist. I've been looking forward to this interview.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, you know, always ask my guest, give a little background. How did you end up where you're at as the assistant director of the Soil Health Lab?
Well, I was raised on a 200-acre farm in western New York. We mostly did livestock, hay, things along those lines. I was always an artist and honestly couldn't wait to get off the farm. But during summers, while I was doing my undergrad at an art school, I started working in a vineyard. And while I was working in the vineyard, I learned how with wine grapes, you actually want the grapes to kind of suffer and reach deep into the soil. And that's what helps to make wine so amazing. That's part of what develops the unique tastes in wine. And from there, I got semi-obsessed with soil. Eventually, I got a job taking samples, you know, with a push probe at Cornell University. And that was over 14 years ago. And I kind of just worked my way up through the lab, analyzing soil, this and that. And then before I knew it, I was assistant director.
Well, as a soil scientist, there's no problem with obsession with soil. I mean, that's a world I can jump into immediately. So tell us a little bit about the Cornell Soil Health Lab and your duties there.
Yeah, so the Cornell Soil Health Lab was the first lab of its kind. We look at the chemical, physical, and biological aspects of soil together in a holistic way. And we report the results back to our clients along with a rating system where we compare their results against all of the other results that we've ever received in our lab.
So, you know, the soil health, especially on the laboratory side, is easily termed as new science, right? So a lot of the testing procedures, especially if we get into the biological realm, are still developing as we look at new and interesting approaches. How does the lab kind of vet what is the best method that we're going to utilize when doing this score and this rating?
Yeah, that's a great question. So our lab was founded by a suite of professors and researchers at Cornell. And we looked at a very large selection of options. And the ones that we ended up choosing were the ones that were the most sensitive to management, right? So that's so important to be able to say, like, we can actually see change in these soil properties if we look at, you know, the cropping systems. Are they using cover crops? Are they reducing tillage, et cetera?
If you don't mind, can we dive into some of those tests a little bit? You know, what are some of the tests that you're doing and how are they performed?
I guess All right. So I want to mention, like, you know, chemical, we do basically what anyone else would do with chemical, you know, nutrient analysis. In New York, we use modified Morgan as an extraction method. And then, of course, we look at organic matter using LOI and then pH. So pretty standard, right? But then when we start to get into the physical and biological aspects, that's where we start to really stand apart. Starting with physical, we do wet aggregate stability, which we developed in our lab using the method uses a rain simulator on stable aggregates between 0.25 and 2 millimeters. And we simulate a very heavy rainstorm, about 6 inches an hour. And then after that, we capture any aggregates that failed. We measure the aggregates that did not fail through forcing them through the sieve and then measuring, really weighing the stone that remains on top of the sieve. We also do a rapid texture assessment, basically just, you know, separating out the sand using a sieve and then letting the silt settle over a certain amount of time, decanting off the clay, weighing the sand, weighing the silt. And from that, we're able to give the percentage of texture. So for the biological assessments, we do respiration. So that's looking at the activity of the microbial community over the course of 4 days. We basically we use a little beaker of KOH and some soil in a sealed container, put it into an incubation, and then we capture the CO2 that's breathed out by the microbes over the 4 days and quantify that. We also do ACE protein, which was developed in our lab, and that's basically looking at the bioavailable nitrogen through looking at protein and protein-like substances in the soil. And then we also look at carbon, of course. So carbon, big deal. We all know that. It's not the most important thing or the only important thing in soil health, but we have a really great carbon analyzer that can get us the total carbon, total nitrogen, basically through heating up the sample at very high temperatures and capturing and measuring the gases that are released. We also measure inorganic carbon, which is really important because we can take our total carbon, our inorganic carbon, and by removing the inorganic carbon, we're able to get to our soil organic carbon. And finally, we also look at active carbon, also known as POXC, which is really important indicator because it's very sensitive to management. It's been around a long time. It was developed by Ray Weil, a guest on your show, and a friend of mine. And we really, I am especially a fan of POXC or active carbon because it has a tendency to kind of show the differences and improvements in soil health faster than a lot of the other indicators.
So if you don't mind, I'm going to jump into a couple of the characteristics you spoke of that are not necessarily new, but they are new in the everyday conversation. Many of them, which we're working on bringing into our lab. So my lab is only about 5 or 6 years old. We just established it, started with basic chemistry. We're a heavily malic three location, but we're also running Olson, Bray, and we did run some modified Morgan not too long ago, bringing in Haney. So we started with the chemical, adding the physical. In the last year, we actually started running all the soil health samples for our conservation commission with many of the tribal partners. And so that's been a learning curve for me, who is more of the basic chemistry background, a whole lot of wet chemistry, in now adopting or bringing on new analyses into the lab, one being the wet aggregate stability. One of the interesting aspects that I found with bringing on more of these soil health indices is that the turnaround time is not quite the same. And so some of our more traditional farmers aren't used to saying, you said you had analysis, it was the respiration. That's a 4-day protocol, correct? And so instead of, okay, we get a soil sample in and in the day, we dry it, we grind it, we're hitting it with modified Morgan or water for pH or whatever, and we can get analysis in 2 or 3 days, they have answers. Now we're doing procedures that take a lot longer. Have you guys looked at, you know, making things more efficient? Because a lot of the early tests we had maybe not have been what I would characterize as efficiently done within a laboratory or a commercial lab.
Yeah, definitely. So, of course, we get asked questions around this often. One thing that is really different about the way that we handle soil is that we air dry soil. We receive our soil fresh. We air dry it. We sieve it by hand through 8 and 2 millimeter. We have a huge crew of specialists working on the samples. So it just takes time. What I usually recommend to folks is that they submit their samples for nutrient analysis yearly. And, you know, you can expect at least around here to get those results back in a couple days, you know, maybe within 5 days, I would say at the longest. And that's what you should be using to make your management decisions. Soil health is more of a long-term investment in knowledge. So our results take 4, even 6 weeks when we're completely slammed. You know, we get about 8,000 samples a year coming through our lab. We have times when we get more samples in a day than we can easily do in a month. You know what I mean? Overtime happens. You know, we have the spring rush, the fall rush, et cetera. So typically, I've found that the people that we work with are pretty patient when it comes to results. And it's really just about explaining that the information they're receiving from us is going to help them make long-term decisions, right? Not short-term decisions. Also, I personally recommend you only test for soil health about every 3 years. It's not something you need to do yearly. It's something you're more monitoring and making changes over time.
Kishan, I think that's extremely important. I don't know if you're much like me, but I probably once a week get somebody sending me, it might be your results, right? Because you're pulling samples. And they bring me these results. It's like, okay, what does this mean I need to do today? And I'm like, that's not really what this is about. But, you know, they bring the CO2 respirations like, oh, I've got to change my fertility today. I'm like, no, this is not. And so I think it's really important to understand that you have the traditional nutrient and those recommendations, which can go out and say, okay, you need this much phos or this much or fix your pH. And you have these that are more of a, I like the way you describe that. This is, you know, a point which you can just see how you're doing and then make a longer range plan. When it comes to that, is Cornell providing guidance or guidelines once these samples are sent out, these results are sent out, saying you should potentially look at doing X, Y, and Z? Or is it just here's your results?
Yeah, so our soil health report is a multi-page report where the front page rates you using a color-coded, you know, your results using a color-coded scale. So like red is kind of like, ooh, you better pay attention to this. And if you have something that flags red, it actually automatically flags up associated constraints, right? And then in the later pages, we kind of get into, these are your results. This is how you fall into everyone. This is what that means for your cropping systems, et cetera. And then the last 2 pages of the report talk about short and long-term management suggestions. So we don't make recommendations. And this is because we respect farmers. It's also because we work with farmers around the world, farming basically anything you can imagine. So we're saying in the short term, you could think about, you know, integrating these specific types of cover crops, you know what I mean? Reducing tillage. In the long term, you might think about some more serious crop rotations and et cetera, you know. And I think that that's really important because a lot of our clients are consultants, you know, and big companies, big not-for-profits, researchers, things like that. So we're kind of providing information that hopefully they can take on to who they're working with.
As you do more and more of this work and you're getting these samples from around the world, but we'll just focus on the U.S., Is there a point where you see some of maybe the ratings become maybe regionally specific? Because, I mean, I caution my growers in Southwest Oklahoma that is, you know, they're only getting 20 inches of rainfall a year, they're dry land, that their ratings are for their environment may not be completely associated with the same things coming out of New York.
Of course. So I think eventually we're planning on moving into crop specific ratings as well as regionally specific ratings. At this point, it's just kind of like, this is how you fall against everything else that we've ever received, right? And that's where the client comes in to bring in their expertise, you know, their experience to say, like, let's say, in viticulture, right? They can say, like, this is what I've seen in viticulture. So, you know, they have to bring in, like, their own intelligence to play. It's, you know, we're providing the information, but there is some interpretation that has to happen from the client.
I appreciate you saying that, Kirsten. We're always on our side, too, suggesting that, you know, that hands-on experience, that agronomic knowledge of living in an environment, working with an environment. And many of our clientele, much like yours, they may have decades of experience within an environment, knowing the intricacies of rainfall patterns, soil types, soil morphology, and being able to apply that data and understand, okay, this should not be just because I'm red doesn't necessarily mean I'm doing a bad job, but in this overall scheme of things, this is what I can look forward and progressing forward. Before we move, because I want to jump into the other aspects, how long have you been involved with the Soil Health Lab?
I'm coming up on 14 years.
Oh, wow. What was it like 14 years ago versus now? Because that's I mean, what that lab is doing 14 years ago versus today, I would expect is a change slightly.
I would say quite a lot. Yes. So when I first joined, we had a fraction of the size, You know, the amount of space, of course. We hadn't developed a lot of our analyses yet. It was most of our labor was grad students, you know. Now we are an independent entity. We're really a commercial testing lab under the umbrella of the university. We're a not-for-profit and pretty much an independent entity. So in the old days, it was a bunch of professors and trying out different things and a lot of research, you know, a lot of going out in the field and taking samples, which I really miss. But luckily, I get to dig around in my own backyard and such, and it's worth it. You know, I enjoy communicating and talking to the public. So that's the other big change, is that now we do a lot more work with like extension, outreach, a lot more talks, you know what I mean? A lot more education of the public.
So when, because I mean, looking back, if I think about, you know, 15, 14 years ago, I wouldn't say that an Oklahoma wheat farmer would know that the Cornell Soil Health Lab existed. Now they all do, right? Everybody knows that that's a primary place to go. When did that really take shape? When did that progression go from, okay, we're trying to figure things out to, oh, we've got a handle on this and we're really going to go forward and push. And I really see you guys as pushing the boundaries. So we're really going to step out there and say, we're the experts, come to us.
I would say like early on in my career, I got, you know, a lot of pushback. And I remember people saying to me, how can you talk about this? You know, like we've been studying pH for, you know, almost 100 years and we know so much about it. And how can you possibly come in and say that this is true? Right. And I was like, I mean, we can't really do anything about the fact that people didn't think about physical and biological aspects of soil that long ago, right? But when it really changed, I would say maybe like 6-7 years ago, I felt kind of a movement. I don't know exactly why. I think that enough other people kind of started to be interested in the subject. So yeah, I don't really know when the tides changed. I think that it might have something to do with people caring about the quality of their food, the public starting to understand the importance of soil, you know, and then farmers, you know, they're the smartest people I know. And I think that farmers recognize truth, you know, when they hear it. And we've also come up with a lot of really good ways to show the difference, the differences between a healthy soil and a not healthy soil. You know, the NRCS has done a lot of really good work on this, you know, with like the slake test and things like that, you know, that we found ways to visually make our points.
What has been, and I guess the last thing in this realm, what has been in your field, one of your more successful methods of communicating? You've talked about, you know, you've moved into more extension and more communication. What's been very successful for your lab?
We have a really good website. I built a lot of it myself, and we have really good fact sheets. We produce short videos explaining things that might be hard to explain in a fact sheet, like how to take good samples, especially, you know, making decisions about where to take samples, comparison sampling, benchmarking, things along those lines. I do a lot of talks at conferences and such. And I do think that, like, actually just getting out there and meeting people, talking to people, being friendly, open, and also you have to keep growing and learning. You know, I mean, that's just how it is in science, of course, you know that. So the fact that we've always been willing to evolve, to change if we need to, I think has made a big difference. But, you know, you have to have resources available to other people, be willing to teach other people what you know. And then from there, it just kind of spreads.
Well, I've got in the last couple of minutes really kind of dig into something that, you know, popped up anytime I search you up doing the backgrounding for this conversation. Your artistic nature popped out. A lot of discussion about what you've done as far as painting via soil, you know, painting with soils. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So when I first started at Cornell, I felt a little bit confused about, like, could I be an artist and a scientist at the same time? You know, I've always been an artist, and I grew up near a really good art university, so I had a lot of training from a very young age. So as part of that, I got curious if I could make my own paints with soil. So I've, you know, developed my own method, which involves using clear gesso, water, and soil that I actually source from our lab that would otherwise be going to the dumpster. And I started painting with soil. It ended up catching the attention of the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization. And they based an international soil painting contest on my work and asked me to lead a team. And we won, luckily, because that would be really embarrassing if we hadn't. So from there, I kind of knew I was onto something. So I paint with soil for myself because I'm an artist. I paint on commission, but I use it, I would say, primarily as a way to get people interested in soil, to see the beauty, to see the colors, the textures, spark that conversation. You know, I get interviewed about my soil art, and I always manage to talk about soil science, right? And then here, in contrast, of course, I get interviewed about soil science, and I always manage to find a way to talk about my art. So I believe that we need creativity in science, and we should be attracting people from all sorts of backgrounds, all sorts of fields into science to solve, you know, the big issues that we have ahead of us. And soil is an essential natural resource. You know, we need to protect it and draw attention to it. And I'm interested in finding ways to help people think about soil a little differently.
So what, using soil, what is your favorite subject matter to paint?
That's an interesting question. I think I enjoy painting people the most, and also hands. I have done a lot of soil paintings of hands, partly because hands are very, very challenging. Mm-hmm. That is why I got into soil science too. It's very challenging. It's very interesting. I know I'll never get bored in this as a field. So I do like to depict people. But I've done all sorts of things. You know, I've done landscapes and buildings. I've done a lot of dog portraits, you know.
I could see that.
Well, once you do one, the next thing you know, that's the one I'm working on right now. So I was like, oh my gosh, I saw that dog you painted. Will you paint my dog? Uh-huh. And it's always soil scientists, of course.
Love it.
But yeah, I can paint pretty much anything.
That's awesome. I know in our lab, so as an undergraduate, I worked in our soil testing lab. And, you know, of course, the first job you get is the grinder. But we even in the late 90s, we had several artists that we always saved the color samples for. So we knew that if we had a gray come in or a deep red or a mullock brown, that we would save that. And even over the years, and I think we need to reinvigorate it. There for a while, we were creating paint kits for 4-H clubs that we were sending out. And so that was one of the 4-H activities, was to paint with soil and then have a conversation about soil and that. And so I think it does a great job of bringing the entire community together over a subject matter that probably isn't on the forefront of very many people's thoughts.
I agree. And that's our job, right?
Absolutely.
It's time for our famous three.
Are you ready to maximize your acres? Discover KWS Hybrid Rye, the high-yielding rye with Pollen Plus technology. Designed for superior growth and resilience, KWS Hybrid Rye helps you achieve greater productivity and profitability. Don't miss out on this innovative solution for your fields. Visit KWS.com today to learn more about how KWS Hybrid Rye can transform your farming practices. KWS Hybrid Rye. Growing innovation for your future.
Well, we've hit our time, and so we need to go into the three questions I have to ask all my guests. And one is, as your day-to-day work, what's a good resource? Where do you go when you have questions?
Well, I reference our manual a lot. As ridiculous as that sounds, because I'm a co-author on it, it doesn't mean that I've memorized the book.
Right? Agreed.
So we have this. I brought it with me, actually.
Fantastic.
Our comprehensive assessment of soil health. And this is available as a free download. So I often go to this when I'm thinking, like, how do I explain something really succinctly? You know what I mean? Like, what can I point people to? So that's one of the leading resources. But I also use a lot of NRCS resources, other universities, things along those lines.
We may have already touched on, but I don't know. What is your favorite leisurely activity when you're not working?
I'm a big fan of hiking. When I travel, I always make a point to go to the art museum and the botanic garden in any city I visit. And I like to get my three-year-old excited about the soil. So we're gardening this year, and I'm teaching her to identify plants and taking advantage of that little sponge of a brain she still has.
Fantastic. And finally, where do people go to find out more about your work, both in the lab and art?
Yeah, so we have a great website. You can just basically Google Cornell Soil Health Lab, comes right up. And then as far as my art, I have a website, soilpainting.com, where you can see kind of a gallery, and there's a bunch of links to pieces about me there as well.
Fantastic. Well, folks, that wraps up another episode of the Crop Science Podcast Show presented by Wisenetics. Thanks for joining us today with our guest, Kirsten Kurtz, Assistant Director, Cornell Soil Health Lab at Cornell University. You know, if you enjoyed this podcast, make sure you hit that subscribe so you get to follow that channel. And anytime we drop a new podcast, you get notified. Also, share the video with your friends and your colleagues. And finally, if you have any questions or suggestions for new guests, please leave us a comment and let us know what you think. Kirsten, it's been a pleasure. I had a lot of fun. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for your work also.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.